I'm just going to say a little bit about how to practice. It might be a little confusing. Well, we've done this here. We've had very particular conditions. What do I do with this stuff when I'm not here on an intensive silent meditation retreat? So I just want to give you a few options or tips. Okay. So we have been in unique circumstances. We've been able to do a lot of meditation every day. Hopefully you've been able to leave behind some of your preoccupations, as well as just notice the other ones that have followed you into the shrine room. And we've been able to both take some time with building up some samatha, some present-mindedness, tranquility of mind, and move into some dharma vichaya, the investigative aspect that's available to us for meditation. You will have to see what's appropriate in your home practice. I don't think there's one answer for everybody on this retreat. Just as we were really encouraging you, even on retreat, to see what was going to be the most helpful thing to be doing. So learning to find that intuitive voice or intuition in you that helps you be in touch with what's going on, what would be most useful, help you be clear and understanding what options there are for you too. So understanding how you can work with what you're finding when you're tuning into how you are and what might be helpful. Yeah. There's just some basic principles that will help you, I think. Not very many that you need to keep in mind. One is you need some samatha as the basis for dharma vichaya or vipassana bhavana work. Yeah. So there's a difference between being purposefully lost, purposefully losing the self, and being totally unaware. Hopefully we've established at least that here. If you don't have some samatha, which is present awareness, then instead of dharma vichaya or vipassana bhavana, you might just end up in an abstract exercise. It's very ungrounded in meditation. Yeah. But you do have reflecting on the Dharma as a general support to your meditation. So study and reflection in the whole of your life will support you being able to just have the Dharma at your fingertips in your actual experience as it's coming and going. So Dharma studies are very good, just different than, you know, doing Dharma Vichaya work in meditation, but it's a good support. Okay, so I think what we've looked at is the principle of just being interested enough to be present with what's happening. So that's the building samatha, to be present. And it might be that some simple dharmic reflection might help you get more present, might help you start. So it's not like you have to be in access concentration to even bring the dharma to mind. A simple thing might be just in preparation, noticing that you're very bound up with the hindrance of sense desire, let's say. And rather than starting off with this reversive relationship to that hindrance, which then makes it very hard to be present because you don't want to be present with your experience, you could bring a simple dharmic clarity to mind and just say, this hindrance is here on the basis of conditions. I could just experience it. It's not permanent. It's not me. There's something very simple like that. And just be willing to acknowledge it. Yeah. So a simple thing like that to help you become more interested and willing to be present. A little dharma reflection, very simple idea, can help pique your interest to be present, and you can learn ways of working with your mind like that. One thing I've done is, if I'm really scattered, a simple thing, the breath is always changing. So rather than me thinking, oh, it's boring, you know, I just say, oh, the breath is always changing, and then I kind of am more interested in noticing, what is it like now? It's a very simple idea. Yeah. So nothing too convoluted here. So need some samatha as a basis, and you can use a simple dharma reflection to help you build that samatha. And the other main principle, I think, is the options of working in a more wise discipline, more disciplined, more structured way, and more of this release way, and just understanding what will help. We've talked about release, just letting everything be, just being with it as it is, not interfering at all, and being a very open kind of quality to being with our experience. And we've also talked about some wise discipline methods, especially, well, when we're talking about establishing samatha, right? So really making an effort to stay with the breath unwaveringly, which takes some discipline, you know. Maybe using that following nose, chest, belly, chest, nose. It's more discipline, yeah? That might help. So this principle of knowing when you need to be more structured, a little bit more disciplined, and when you need to apply an effort that's more released and open, or when that's appropriate and you can do that without just getting totally lost, is another basic principle. So what happens sometimes, I think, is people drive themselves really hard with structure. And then they react to that. Like, no more, I'm just going to let my mind be in it. And for the first, I don't know how long, maybe month, week, it's really good. At some point, it just slides into just being really vague. It's a form of suffering in itself, right? We actually lose any benefit from it. It's not at all clear. We can hang out there for a long time. So understanding, will a little more structure be helpful? Will more openness in how I'm working be helpful? And then whether you actually use these contemplations or whether you kind of take it into the four-stage mindfulness of breathing. If you found that the first six, or you found a path through it that helps you get really concentrated and present, well, it's beneficial. So I think you could keep working with that. So if this is something that's just really felt quite proficient and really works for you, then great. If this all still feels really unfamiliar and you're pretty new to meditation, I'd say use that four-stage mindfulness of breathing and see how the work we've done here just informs that four-stage practice. As I said before, that four-stage practice has everything you need, really. So keep it simple, and that can be your basic working ground, and then you can work with your meditation teacher. You know, if other things seem to be arising that might be helpful, well, check it out with your meditation teacher or someone at a center that you're working with. The other thing that will happen is you might just get really haphazard and start doing a little this, a little that, and it's not really adding up to much of an effective practice, yeah? So check it out if you feel like maybe something will be a benefit and you're newer to meditation. But I think that four-stage practice is a good working ground for a long time. It's simple, it's just nice. So if you have a busy life, you just have this four-stage practice and you can just rely on it. If you feel quite proficient in that four-stage practice and you came here kind of wanting to investigate how to take that further, I think I'd leave it to you to explore the contemplations at your own pace, as it were. You don't need to rush. You don't need to be doing all 16 in a sit. It's possible, depending on conditions in your life. But I gave you this condensed method, which is a simplified version. One's a very open awareness version, where we practice with the breathing until a certain level of concentration and calm is achieved, and then we just open to anything. Open anything that presents itself in the mind or body, and just experience it, and experience it from the standpoint of the 13th contemplation, right? From that deeper nature, looking at the deeper nature of it as impermanent, coming and going. This is a practice, and Larry Rosenberg says he doesn't recommend this for beginners, and this applies to what I was saying about if you're not really clear about what it is to be aware and not what it is to be not aware, you get very lost doing this. And even if you gauge what's happening with yourself, if you're not that clear when you come down to sit, you want to make sure there's enough sort of stability to do this so you don't end up just floating around. Yeah. And if you do start doing it, you end up floating around, we'll come back and reestablish that samatha. The next option is a little more structured, so I think we can have the support of the structure here, which is investigating a particular tetrad. So starting with getting concentrated, I use the first tetrad all the time to get concentrated, but I know some people have said they have other ways of doing that. So if you're proficient in getting concentrated, well, don't mess up what you already know how to do well. Yeah, but get concentrated, get present, and then you can investigate a particular tetrad. This sit today, I'm just going to work with the Vedana tetrad. Or this sit, I'm going to get concentrated and I'm going to specifically investigate the mind tetrad. So it's just less to do in one sit. Okay, so that's just to give a little form that you can try. I think that's the benefit of the whole sutta is it brings us in touch with our whole experience. So rather than compartmentalized, it's getting at our whole experience. So yeah, I think you just have to work with yourself skillfully. Where there's interest, we'll be able to stay with it and get the benefit of doing that work. Where there's not interest, there's probably some benefit as well. So, yeah, I wouldn't force the mind, but there's benefit in the whole of the tetrads. I tend to, on solitaries, spend more time really letting it go at its own pace, starting with one and just tuning up again. It's almost like musicians play scales, So I go on solitary, I like to play scales and tune up and see what's maybe, a weak finger that's been ignored. I was thinking, the other thing is, I think the Anapanasati Sutta does need something that explicitly brings in the dimension of kindness. We can be kind in it, but I think it's very helpful to have the metta practice really reinforcing that. And you saw how we did the metta practice here, which is the work of the Anapanasati can inform the metta practice. It can be this lovely interplay between them. The nature of reality we're noticing in us is, of course, the nature of everything. And part of that's being interconnected. So we'll touch into that through doing this work, but again, helping it along with metta practice I think is really, really beneficial. For those of you that, through getting ordained, about the bodhicitta practice, I think the bodhicitta practice is a great complement because it uses the breath. That's what I've been doing more of, and they really weave together nicely. Okay, so that's just some tips on how to practice. I think you're going to have to go home and look at your mind and see what's happening now, and then you're not going to know now necessarily what's the best way to approach it, but you'll see. So I want to say something about Green Tara, who's now on the shrine, which symbolizes, interesting, one leg in meditation, one leg stepping out into the world. So it's not because you step out into the world you're going to lose all this. It's part of who you are. It's also coming and going. You've been conditioned by it. You've been affected by it, perfumed by it. Everything's changing also. Okay, so that's the Green Tara aspect. It's been quite fearless work you've been doing. Tara's about fearlessness, just being with what is. Yeah, so you might just discover there's quite a lot of strength in you from doing this work. And we can specifically dedicate, actively dedicate the benefit of anything we've done to all beings. So we're not creating this outside world, inside retreat wall. Yeah? So we're engaging, giving everything away.